David Tullis here. Love your neighbor and buy local. Near is better than far. Small than big, and simple than complex. In our rubric of local economy, the free market, and in the footnotes, in 5-point type, very small type, in Geneva font, the neutral font that does not have compulsion in its characters. We have personal is better than corporate, and physical is better than abstract. Make sure if you are still on Facebook that you like us. We know FB is passing. We don't like the censorship there, but we are there as well. And feel free to like us. There's a spat going on, and Marty Haynes has been dragged into a fight. He's been accused by Jonathan Mason, running for the House seat in the East Ridge area, of having done a favor by lowering the valuation on a house that is connected with Esther Helton and her ex-husband Chris Helton, the city court judge here in East Ridge. And it seems like a reach to hear that, and there's a lot in the press today about this Republican stab in a very bitter and kind of mean campaign. And I want to ask a Democrat about this. I figure that we have someone who's not involved in that particular race, and his name is Jodef Tongnupnua, who is a candidate for that position on the other side of the aisle. So, Jodef, what do you make of this dispute that dragged in Marty Haynes, who's indignant at it being alleged that he had a kind of favor, a secret favor that can't be secret at all for Esther Helton? What do you make of this dispute?
Well, but before I get started on the drama of the time, I want to say thank you, David, for having me on your show. I learn a lot every single time I listen, so thank you for having me on. So, you know, look, the specifics around the particular issue that I've seen in the paper, and from that to the negative mailers to the signs, I think is a sign that this election has gone off the rails. It has not been about issues whatsoever. It seems to be just kind of moving from mudslinging to mudslinging, and I think that's a bad deal for District 30 residents. At the end of the day, this has got to be about working families.
All right, so that is the argument that you're bringing forth. You're making a positive argument. You are going to be on the ballot, of course, and people who are Democrats or want to vote in that primary can check your name, even though there's no opposition in your party for that for that seat. So, we have Bill Lee running for governor on the Republican ticket, saying that he is above the mudslinging by Diane Black and others, and Mr. Boyd in that governor's race, and he apparently is doing very well, and he has kind of a noble aspect.
Sure.
Here, though, what do we since you're a resident of East Ridge, Joda, what do you know about these two people, Jonathan Mason and Esther Helton? How do you help? You're on the other side. How do you evaluate, for my listener who's a conservative, let's say, these two candidates?
So I think what is important here is that we have a campaign that is focused on issues. So regardless of, you know, the specifics around Esther or Jonathan, who I think are both very nice people, I think that the tone of the campaign has been indicative of the fact that we can do a little bit better as a community. It's been a constant race to the bottom. And so that's why when I got into this race, it was going to be about working families, making sure that our schools are better, making sure that folks get paid a fair wage for doing good work, and finally making sure that people have access to affordable health care. I don't think those are necessarily liberal or conservative issues. I think those are issues that families are thinking about every single day, regardless of what ballot you pull.
Would you identify yourself as a progressive Democrat, Joda?
I would just say that I'm a Democrat, and I'm excited to say that, you know, I bat straight down the middle. The best way to explain it is, you know, I'm a Phil Bredesen Democrat. Remember.
What does that mean?
Yeah, I think it means that you're going to be focused on common sense, pragmatic solutions. And I think a good idea can come from Republicans or Democrats. That's what we need more of in our state. We've seen so much divisiveness that has been ruining our politics. And I think people are sick of it. When you drive down the road and you see two signs sitting next to each other that say Esther Helton voted for Barack Obama, and then Esther Helton did not vote. Yeah, twice. and then did not vote for Barack Obama twice. I think most normal people drive by that and say, gosh, I thought politics and our legislature was about to be something about something bigger than that, than a voting record from 10 or 6 years ago. But unfortunately, this race has gotten to be about far too little other than just petty mudslinging.
And I've heard several times the ad against Lee, accusing him of being pro-abortion, anti-gun, and so on. And they're just the ads are just simply childish, and they're highly annoying. just the tone of those ads against that one candidate. So you're Joda, and you mentioned three things here that I take it are kind of your main arguments: the minimum wage, expanding Medicaid, and then you had another point. But let's first mention these first two, and then we'll get to the petty loan controls. Yeah, I think absolutely. That you are wanting to see passed. What about the minimum wage? Does Tennessee have any authority at all, or does a House member have any sway at all on that issue? It seems like it's beyond the scope of your power as a House member.
So we are only one of four states without a minimum wage protection law. We have a minimum wage set at $7.25 by the federal government, but otherwise Tennessee does not have a minimum wage. Other states have passed minimum wages that are higher than that or just the same as the federal wage. And Tennessee could do the exact same thing. We could determine a wage that makes sense for Tennesseans. I think that there is a middle ground between what we've seen in the coastal cities, which I do think that could kill jobs. If you move up to $15 or $13 an hour in a state like Tennessee, I think that would be devastating to businesses in our community. But I think something reasonable like $10 an hour for Tennesseans makes a lot of sense. And, you know, that's kind of found to be true in the fact that most small businesses in Tennessee already pay that amount of money. The people who are not paying $10 an hour are generally big box chain retailers from out of town. And I think what they're asking us to do, and I think this is an important note for folks who may be on the more conservative side of the aisle, what those companies are asking taxpayers to do is subsidize their low wages. So what they end up doing, if you work 40 hours and you make $7.25 or $8 an hour, you've got to be on public assistance. So these companies are getting away with paying low wages and expecting taxpayers to pick up
but
the
doesn't
tab.
Doesn't your position, Joda Tongnupnua, assume too much of that wage? These are starting wages. They're not intended to be a support for a family. No one in a job like that paying the minimum wage can support a family, hardly himself. So are you not expecting too much of entry-level job wages?
Well, respectfully, I don't think all of these jobs are entry-level. You're thinking about important jobs like being a Head Start teacher. If you're responsible for teaching our kids how to read and you're only getting paid $8.50, that is a important job. And I think everybody in our community recognizes that teachers are an important part of the public service. And I think that they need to be compensated like the critical professional employees they are. But unfortunately, and budgets are moral documents, and we have not made that clear whenever we decided to pay our teachers too few. We've got about 70,000 plus workers working at or below the minimum wage, and then several dozen thousand more that are working near the minimum wage, below $10 an hour. And then you've seen jobs that are traditionally supported and been the bedrock of the middle class, jobs that you could get without a college degree that will pay $50,000, $60,000 a year. Those jobs are going away. They're leaving to go to Mexico or China. And now you've got people who are doing really important work or doing work they really care about. And the average minimum wage worker, by the way, is something like 28 or 30 years old. It's not because they're lazy. They're working 40 hours a week. I think anybody who's working 40
hours. Probably at that age, having dependents, maybe wife,
sure,
but maybe children as well.
Right, yeah. And they're trying to support a family on a wage that just simply doesn't pay the bills. I think we've got to do better by our workers.
Now, another one of your three main positions touches on Medicaid. You're proposing expanding that. Again, that your first position,
sure,
is an intervention by the state into the marketplace, and this and is expanding Medicaid intervention.
Just say that I think the characterization of the minimum wage as an intervention is an intervention that was passed, you know, 60, 70 years ago. I mean, we had the minimum wage was, I think, $1.68 in 1964, but it had an $11 purchasing power. The fact is that working families are paid a lot less today than they ever have been, and since the 1970s, wages have stayed flat. So if you're thinking about, you know, the ability to pay your bills and you're feeling squeezed, you're right. Like that impulse is correct.
Well, the damage to the working man is from the central bank, whose currency is continually being depreciated by the issuance of new debt in dollars.
Well, one of the things that you can control as a state legislature, which is what I'm focused on, is fiscal policy within your state. And monetary policy is the role of the federal government and particularly the Federal Reserve. But I think making sure that we're doing our responsibilities as a state legislature is important. And unfortunately, they've abdicated that responsibility.
Okay, Medicaid, what does your constituent want in Medicaid?
Yeah, so Medicaid expansion is really important. So right now, the poorest folks in Tennessee are already covered by Medicaid. That's just a fact. What we don't have right now is this group of folks who are working, you know, 30, 40 hours a week, but they don't make enough money to afford the premiums on the exchange, but they make too much money to afford or to qualify for Medicaid. I was talking to an Air Force sergeant who served our nation's military. He left the service, ended up going to work for a manufacturer whose jobs were moved to Mexico, and then after that, he was laid off, and when that happened, he, instead of, you know, taking unemployment or what have you, he started a nonprofit to help folks with special needs learn how to cope with everyday life. And he makes money, but he does not make enough money to afford insurance. What we would do is, by expanding Medicaid, we would take the money that was provided by the federal government that, if we don't take, goes to other states. Tennessee would get that money and allow folks like Chuck to be able to afford health care. I think that if our veterans can't afford health care, that is a moral failing in the United States, and it's a moral failing in Tennessee. And by the way, it wouldn't cost Tennessee taxpayers a single dime. So 95% at first, all the way down to 90% in 3 to 4 years, I believe, is covered by the federal government. And the law that our Republican governor, Bill Haslam, proposed said that if it dips below 90, then the law just goes away. Those people don't qualify anymore. But the 10% that the Tennesseans were liable for was actually going to be covered by the Tennessee Hospital Association. So this is a benefit to taxpayers at zero cost. I don't understand how this isn't a common sense slam dunk.
This is David Tillis. We do thank you for tuning into the program, 92.7 and 95.3 FM HD4 High Definition Radio 4. We're talking with Joda Tarnopnua, who is a House candidate on the Democrat side, looking over bemusedly at Jonathan Mason and Esther Helton hitting each over each other with clubs on their head. Now, a third point that you are emphasizing on your campaign trail, Joda, is the payday loan industry. Many poor people are subject to that industry. They've enter into an equitable relationship with it. They become borrowers, and they get on a treadmill. What is wrong with the statutes now, or do we have statutes that are not being enforced?
So it's both. So right now we have the highest concentration of predatory lenders. So these payday lenders, checking to cash folks, in the state of Tennessee, we have the highest concentration across the United States.
Meaning your district?
No. Well, our district has the third most in the state, and our state's among the worst in the United States. So we really are among the worst of the worst in our country. And these folks charge 460% interest. It doesn't matter how many of them there are. The increased level of competition amongst payday lenders tends to not drop prices. So they charge as much as they possibly can. And the number of loans that you take out on average is something like 8 in a row. And the loans are actually designed for you not to be able to pay them back. They make a profit off of you being late on those loans. And I think those kinds of loans are wrong. And this is not a new idea.
Are they morally wrong or just
absolutely. Usury is mentioned more than any sin in the Bible. You look back and you see how devastating these loans can be to a working family. I got an email 4 days ago from a woman who is living out of state, but her brother lives in Tennessee, and he is a mental handicap, and he is just getting these checks in the mail. If you sign the back, you can deposit them, and it just he wiped out of his account and then hit him with non-sufficient fund fees. So those rack up, and she's saying, what can I do? And the reality is our state legislature has allowed this to happen because we have some of the laxest laws in the entire country. And if we really wanted to make progress on this, we'd stop taking payday lending money. That's the secret here, is that they write big checks, pack money, and it's a devastating thing for our economy.
This is David Tulis, and caller, you're on the line with Joda Tarnopnua. What is your call? What is your question?
Yes, I've been listening on the payday loan issue, and if I come to it from a Christian perspective, the Bible clearly commands that the employer should be paying the day he earns it. Obviously, the Christian church doesn't follow that, but why wouldn't that? Why wouldn't we address going to the employer first, have the employer pay on a daily basis, and eliminate regulating in the middle steps? Let the employee get his wage the time he earns it.
Right, you're saying that the payday loan industry is subsidized by employers, many of whom are professing Christians, who don't pay daily as the scriptures require that the man working in the field is paid daily, lest his cry come out against you. There's a warning against holding the wages of the working man. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Is it technically possible to do that?
Absolutely. My field is software, and yes, it would be a very easy process, especially as we're, you know, one of the objectives, I think, behind the overregulation of taxes and whatnot is it makes the process of paying an employee more complicated. But considering the amount of computing power we have, you know, in your cell phone, it's very easy for us to develop the services where an employee can pay an employer each day, and the employer doesn't have to go to the loan sharks in order to cover the daily bread.
So one thing that's interesting about this is that I don't necessarily know that this solves the problem entirely, but I think it is a better solution than what we have now, is that for small dollar loans to help cover emergency expenses, one potential solution is actually leveraging employers themselves, and where they could say, hey, look, and if you're falling behind on your bills or something came up, we will lend you that money and then take it out over a number of your paychecks at an interest rate that's much more fair, or at no interest rate at all. I think that's a very, very smart idea. Communities in Texas have done this, and I think it's a great way to keep people out of debt.
Then why would we focus on trying to regulate the loan industry rather than eliminate the need for it?
So I think that what's interesting, I mean, the need for it is that people are paid very little, so which is why I talked earlier about making sure that working folks get paid a fair wage for doing good work. But, you know, saying that we've got to solve that before we solve this other problem, I think we can do two things at once. Our state is fully capable of that. And then, you know, making sure that if you need emergency cash, you don't have to go to an organization that's charging twice what the mob did. I think that's, you know, that's just a basic, decent thing we can do as a legislature and as Tennesseans.
But don't you think by imposing more and more regulation, adding the complexity of the wage system, by adding complexity to the system, you actually hand control to the Walmarts of the world, because they have the resources to handle the complexity, whereas that mom-and-pop store down the street doesn't?
So I actually don't think this is complex at all. Payday lending hasn't been legal through most of human history. It was illegal in Tennessee starting in 1994. We still have a usury law on the books. You can't charge over, I think it's like 18% in Tennessee for a traditional loan. But the way they get around this is saying the deferred presentment, what payday lending is not actually a loan, that you're giving a check to somebody post-dated for the future, and then you get your paycheck up front, and that's not technically lending. And if that sounds fishy to you, I think you're right. If that's not a loan, I don't know what is.
Thanks so much for your call. Appreciate it. All right, so the question is, there's a reform proposed by this programmer who says that it's technically possible to pay daily.
Sure.
That would obviate the need for this industry. The industry is there to serve a human need. It's a lawful, legitimate industry. It serves a marketplace. It has created a marketplace.
I would say it is a lawful industry. I don't think it's a legitimate industry.
Okay. But it does provide a real service to a marketplace that needs, is crying for this this cash before the payday hits, right? Payday's Friday. Here it is Monday.
Sure.
And I have a car repair. I need to have money to pay my food bill and my gas and my light bill Tuesday through Friday, so that it serves that need among these poor people.
Yeah, so I think employers that want to try something like that to make their employees' lives easier, I think that is fully up to them. I'm not going to step in and tell a business what to do or how to pay their employees, especially when they have an arrangement with that employee. As long as they're paying their employees fairly, if that employee says once every 2 weeks, that's fine with me. But if they want to try something like this to try and alleviate the concern, I think that's fine. You know, I don't have any problems with that, but I think that the first step has to be getting rid of payday lenders in the first place.
This is David Tulis. We're talking with Jodak Tanupnua, who is running as a Democrat for the State House here in East Ridge, and in the same district that Jonathan Mason and Esther Helton are fighting it out.
And if it's easier, you can just call me Joda. That's a lot easier for
Joda.
Most people.
Well, I want to get the name out there because that is your name,
yeah.
Joda, but you're the only Joda on the ballot.
That's right.
And so you're it sounds like you're running a think tank. What's the name of your think tank?
It's called the Metro Ideas Project. We've been around for about 3 years. We replaced the Ox Center in a lot of ways. And what we've been doing is making sure that our community has the information it needs to make smart decisions.
And have you had a chance to look at all at the Title 55 reform that we've been discussing for a month or two?
I briefly looked at it, and I'm looking forward to learning more from you.
It's an exciting project, and it sounds like you want reform, and we're all about reform here at the David Tullis Show and Nuclear Radio. Joda, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This is David Tullis, and Joda is running for the State House as a Democrat, and he's the son of Thai immigrants and born in native...
One Thai immigrant, and then
one
mom's from Italy.
So. Mom from Italy, that's right. Thank you for that correction. You can find out more about him on the internet. David Tullis, 92.7, local economy and the free markets. We've got some great sponsors. Do love on them and patronize their shops today.
Thank you so much, David.